This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. This month, NPR has been presenting a series of stories on a topic everyone can relate to, stress. The coverage stems from a nationwide survey conducted by NPR, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and the Harvard School of Public Health. It finds that about half of Americans report a major stressful event in the past year, and that health problems are, by far, the biggest contributor to feeling stressed out. But beyond these broad, pretty obvious conclusions, the individual stories in this series hit home. A mother of three boys whose husband is in a car accident, and how her workload and anxiety around caring for everyone led to chronic health problems. A young waitress just scraping by and constantly worried about where the next dollar's going to come from. But the stories aren't all downers. There's a lot of discussion about building resilience to stress, and the survey also found one in seven Americans report no stress at all. Today in The Exchange, struggles with stress in America. We follow up on the NPR series, and let's hear from you, your stories of stress or the lack thereof. Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests include Greg Frischone. He's an associate chief of psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital. He also directs the Division of Psychiatry and Medicine and the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine. And Greg Frischone, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Lauren. Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us, Barry Litt, marriage and family therapist at Human Dynamics Associates in Concord. And Barry, thank you for being here as well.
You're welcome. Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Nicole Sawyer, clinical psychologist in Exeter, consulting psychologist for the New Hampshire State Police. In addition to treating individuals in her private practice, including combat veterans, first responders, adult survivors of trauma, and others. And Nicole, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, all of you, but Nicole, I want to start with you. So according to the survey, about half of Americans say they're pretty stressed out. No big surprise there. What are you seeing, Nicole, among the people you work with? What's causing their stress?
Well, a lot of the folks that I see initially come in with difficulties in their relationships. That's often what's bringing them into treatment. And what we find as we start digging through some of these problems they're having at home with their spouse or with their coworkers is that they're extremely stressed out with the other parts of their lives, the day in and day out responsibilities. People are feeling overwhelmed with these responsibilities. Some of them are incredibly self-imposed. There's these demands to be the best mother, to be the breadwinner, to be the best CEO, to be the best Boy Scout parent, to soccer mom, whatever, you know, whatever the responsibility, it feels overwhelming to be at the top of your game on every aspect of your life. I'm finding that these responsibilities or these perceived responsibilities to be perfect in every way are bringing folks into my office saying, you know, I cannot get along with my husband. He doesn't understand what I need. I don't understand why he needs to do X, Y, and Z all the time. And there's fighting ensuing, difficulty with children. And when we talk about what is really bringing them to these arguments, it's silly things about how the household runs or who's going to pick up the child at soccer camp. And when we start working through breaking down some of these responsibilities and allowing ourselves to be a little bit less perfect and a little bit more human, you know, people find that they can breathe a little easier each day.
Wow. So it's partly about expectations.
Absolutely.
And those that we place on ourselves. We mm-hmm. have to bring homemade cupcakes to the birthday party. We mm-hmm. can't just pick them up at the grocery store.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Barry Litt, what do you think? What are you seeing?
I think I'm seeing the same clients Nicole is seeing. I don't really see folks coming in due to, sort of changes in sociocultural stressors. I didn't see, a particular influx with 9/11. I don't see waves of people coming in due to economic stress. I see folks coming in dealing with what I would think of as chronic stressors or chronic problems that, ultimately have their roots in relational dysfunction, family dysfunction, and that are now manifesting in the therapy room. So it's couples who aren't able to get along or negotiating their differences. It's folks who are having difficulty with their children or disciplining their children. It's folks who have unrealistic expectations, as Nicole was explaining, expecting too much of themselves, expecting too much of their relationship, expecting somehow that their relationship is going to make them feel better about themselves. And the bad news is that those relationships cannot really make you feel better about yourself. The good news is that accepting that and working through that differently can bring a lot of relief.
Wow. Well, we should definitely dig into this expectations thing a little bit more, where they come from, whether you guys just start singing the song from Frozen, let it go, let it go, let it go. But Dr. Frashone, the survey that NPR did find that health problems were a big cause of stress for people, and also financial struggles. So give us a little bit more there, Greg, if you could. What's causing people's stress in America?
Sure. Before I get to that, I think just to respond to the earlier question, there was a piece that Shankar Vedantam did on NPR. One of the surprising outcomes of the poll was that whereas expectations were that work stress would dominate family stress, relationship stress, as Barry and Nicole just mentioned, were strong responses in the poll. And the challenge then becomes, because we know that life in America today in the workforce is challenging if you're lucky enough to have a job, but family usually is a respite, or it can buffer against the stresses of our daily work life. And if we're returning home to face more stressors, then that's going to be a challenge for the physiology of the organism.
Yeah, that was a great piece, and he ended it by saying, thank God it's Monday, right, instead of TGIF,
right,
thank God it's
exactly.
Friday, because people do have family stress, but it's more acceptable to talk about work stress. So that was an eye-opener. But go ahead, give us a little bit more on the other causes.
Well, another outcome of the poll was clearly that illness and disease and poor health and disability were really topped the list of stress in the past year and in the past month. And that's no surprise to us as physicians, of course. And it leads to a discussion of really what is stress. And waking up in the morning initiates a day of stress. That's just the natural history of things. And sometimes it's hard to explain that to people because stress is seen as an epithet, but really it's a normal part of life. Really, it's another name for the energy it takes to run our physiological systems. So you wake up and you get a burst of stress hormone cortisol, and that prepares you for the challenges you face during the day. So that's normalcy. There's nothing abnormal about that.
So it's not all bad.
No, it's not all bad. But the brain is really the center of operations. It's that organ which is responsible for maintaining your physiological systems and hopefully in a normative range. But that takes energy. So if you're someone who, cycling back to what we just said, someone who has a difficult relationship with your boss and you're worried about keeping your job, and then the stress at home of everyone trying to be perfectionistic and meeting demands, then your brain is working overtime to keep your physiology in check. And that's taking up a lot of energy. And that's where vulnerability comes in, vulnerability to illness and disease. And as you see from the poll, people are awfully worried about their health, and in many of the respondents, they had reason to be because they are suffering from what is epidemic in our country, metabolic syndrome with obesity and hypertension and high cholesterol. And
well, and it's a cycle too, right? I mean,
right,
people are stressed
exactly.
about their health, and then the stress in and of itself
right,
creates
right.
more health problems.
It's a vicious cycle.
Let me also absolutely. Invite our listeners to join us, and then so much more to talk about with the three of you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Give us a call. Tell us your stories of stress, what causes it, how you manage it, whether you're one of those 1 in 7 who report they have no stress. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Nicole, to you, but I want to hear from everyone again. What do you think? Are Americans today more stressed than previous generations? Those who lived through World War I, the Great Depression, World War II. I mean, I'm wondering, Nicole, if we have more stressors today for real, or if we're just not as good at dealing with it, or if we're just allowed to talk about it today and earlier generations couldn't. I mean, I'm just wondering because people say they're so stressed, but, you know, Nazi Germany isn't threatening us. Mm-hmm. That's a big stressor. We're not in a Great Depression. Mm-hmm. That's a big stressor. I wonder what you think.
Well, I'm
asking you to be a historian here,
yeah.
but I just wonder what you think.
I'm inclined to say that we are not more stressed than the previous generations. Our stress is just very different. And I think going back to expectations and responsibilities, I think that the folks have changed. Our lifestyles have changed dramatically, but society has not necessarily caught up to that. So the gender roles in particular are a great example of where a large source of stress in the family comes from, that there are expanded gender roles right now. Moms have careers, but they're also still kind of expected to be the full-time caregiver at home. Dads obviously continue to be the breadwinners typically, but they have a larger expectation now of having an involvement at home. But that balance hasn't been struck at home yet about where everybody fits in and how all those responsibilities are going to be met. And that's a huge part of the stress in our lives. And so when we are when we're trying to figure this stuff out, there's clashing going on. And I don't think that our stress today is any more than any other generation's stress. I just think that the demands on our lives are different. And so we're feeling the stress in different parts of our lives. Before, there were more basic need stresses going on, especially when you're talking about times of war where there's legitimate threats to our safety here in this country. But I think that right now it's more of a very internal stress, whereas before the stressors were more external. So I don't think it's more or less. I just think it's different.
All right. Well, and coming up, I want to ask everybody if women or men are more stressed out in this country, what you're seeing, or whether they're both stressed, they just feel it differently. We'll also take your calls and questions at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today in The Exchange, we're examining Americans' struggles with stress, following up on the NPR series this summer on this topic. Give us a call. Your stories of stress, what causes it, how you manage it, whether you're one of those 1 in 7 who report they have no stress. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, Barry Litt, I did want your thoughts also on this idea of, you know, Americans say they're so stressed out. But boy, if you're a student of history, I mean, there have been some major stressors in our past, whether, you know, conquering the American West or dealing with plagues and diseases or economic crashes or wars and so forth.
That's right, Lauren. And if we can use current day traditional societies to teach us about what our very, very ancient ancestors would have faced, they would have faced regular challenges of disease, famine, early child death, maternal death in childbirth, short life expectancy.
Yeah, people died of diseases that today we can cure with penicillin.
That's right, predation. So it's hard to imagine that the stress is any different or better or worse, you know, today. However, I think one thing that is different that we learn in observing traditional societies is they have a greater continuity of community, social support, family networks, extended kinship networks. So they spend more time talking with each other, being with each other. There are fewer distractions. There's no social media, TV, radio, et cetera. And so I think that the support is better. So there's a greater resilience, perhaps, to buffer against those stressors.
You've got a community of family and friends who are right there that you can just lean on.
That's right. And
we're not all spread out.
That's right. And traditional cultures, early cultures, and presumably early human societies had community-based rituals to handle stress or to cope with it or to work it through, so that it could be that there was, ironically, more support or more resilience, at least potentially in early societies than we have today.
We should definitely talk about resilience in a moment. But I did want to ask you, Greg, men and women, who's more stressed?
Well, yeah, I just to comment on the last point, our aspirations are different now as well. So if you just look at aging as a proxy for the sequelae of stress, we're looking at age expectancies rising into the 80s now. That wasn't true during the World War II generation or in the 50s and 60s. And of course, that also leads to some stress. What are the people in their 70s going to do about retirement or continuing to work, et cetera, fears of Alzheimer's, et cetera. So, aspirations are different, and that variable is important in terms of the kind of challenges we face in our society today. But men and women, I think, Nicole mentioned in her earlier statement that women, as they're in this transformational phase, which is really challenging, where they're entering into the workforce now. Of course, more than 50% of medical students are women, and yet they are still challenged with being the core of families, raising children, et cetera. That is that still remains to be played out. I have a daughter who's a physician and starting a family, and that has to challenge a person's resiliency. So men, of course, are dealing with the counterpoint to that. How are they going to deal with more women in the workplace and deal with increased responsibilities in the home?
So we can't really say who's more stressed out,
right,
Greg.
Exactly.
It's just different. Because this is terribly cliche, but women do at least talk to each other more about their stress. So that's a stress reliever. Sometimes I'll say to my husband, what'd you guys talk about?
And, right.
Yes, again,
true.
Terribly
true.
Cliche, but they're not talking about their problems.
Right, right. There was research, this is anecdotal, but about the number of words that men on average say during the day and the number of words that women say during the day. And there's a couple of orders of magnitude difference. And so in terms of verbal functioning, women are much better at ventilating and getting support in that regard. And then the styles are different, too, in terms of dealing with stress. So perhaps men are more inclined to a fight-flight approach, where women are more inclined to a tend-mend approach to dealing with stress. And that plays itself out in terms of vulnerability to stress and in terms of resiliency.
Okay, let's take some calls if we could. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Let's hear your stories of stress, what some of the triggers are, how you deal with it. Also, if you've heard some stories from the NPR series this summer on stress that caught your attention, some of the themes that have been raised, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Barbara's in Durham. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
So I'm a faculty member at the university, and I teach a course to students called Stressed Out, and I'm a stress researcher. So one of the things that I take with my students is a very pragmatic approach, very practical. You're not going to get rid of stress in this culture and in this society at all and in this lifestyle that we mostly have. So one of the things that we really try to promote is that you have opportunities to break the cycle and you build stress resilience. And stress resilience comes in a lot of different forms, but exercise is great, keeping people around you who you are familiar with and feel comforted by, having animals and pets close by, something to build up affinity also, just being able to talk through problems with people who are willing to do so, and finding things to keep you busily engaged, finding places where you are good at things. So you might not be a great student, but you might be a great soccer player. And so finding moments where you can have control over your destiny and feel great at what you do, all of those are really great stress buffers.
What do you think about this, Nicole? And I wonder, you know, most of us know what we need to do to help manage stress. A lot of the stuff that Barbara talked about. So thank you, Barbara. So we know it. How much do we do it? How much do we go for that walk? How much do we take a yoga class? How much do we seek a therapist?
Right. And the catch to all of that is that requires time. And that's the first thing that folks are going to say to me. Yeah, I know that if I went to the gym, you know, for even 30 minutes a day, I'd feel better. But when am I going to find the time to do that?
Maybe they need to stop making those homemade cupcakes.
Right. Exactly. Pinning
I'm
on
just
Pinterest.
Kidding.
But, you know, one thing I would add to what she was saying about some of the things for self-care as well is learning to just be. Now, one of the things that a lot of folks struggle with today, and myself included, is being able to take a moment where there isn't anything going on around you, where maybe the kids are at somebody else's house and everything's quiet, and just sit down and be with yourself for a moment.
Even if you don't have time to go to a yoga class or do an
exactly,
hour-long meditation.
10 minutes sometimes of just letting yourself sit down on the couch and be quiet in a quiet space is an incredible opportunity that many of us say, no, I really should unload that dishwasher. Oh, I really should turn over that load of laundry.
Yeah, I think I would have a hard time doing that. There's always so much to do.
It's a much more difficult thing to do than a lot of us realize because we don't even give ourselves that opportunity. But many of us have those 10 minutes in the day that occur that we could just sit there for a second and not check our phone, put the phone down, turn off the TV, put down the tablet, and just sit for a moment. It's not quite meditation, but it is definitely an opportunity for your brain to recharge. And many of us pass it up just to meet the next demand that our day is going to bring. Instead, quiet. Just be quiet.
What do you think, Barry? We all know what we're supposed to do. Again, many of the recommendations Barbara talks about. Do we do it?
No. And I want to underscore a couple points from both Barbara and Nicole's point, and that is that we're going to be very limited in our ability to change the external environment, the external stressors around us. And that includes the demands on our time, which is why most of us don't do those things we all know we're supposed to do. However, what we can emphasize is changing our internal environment, that is to say our own attitude towards stress, our own adaptation towards stress. Nicole's point about quiet, for example. I would say, you know, arguably one of the first psychotherapists was Siddhartha Gautama, a.k.a. the Buddha, who over two millennia ago observed that, the relief of suffering is through a mental discipline, changing that internal environment. So in terms of how do I change my resilience, given that I can't change the external environment, I think there are things that I can do. And it starts maybe by developing a different attitude towards my unpleasant emotions. In other words, I think at the risk of making a caricature, I think, you know, there's some sort of ethos in our culture that I should be entitled to feel good. Like all the time, and that if I feel bad or if I feel shame, embarrassment, distress, sadness, that's a pathological condition, that's some character flaw, that there's something broken and it should be fixed. And therefore, the expectation is that I should feel good, essentially content and okay, like all the time. If I'm not, I'm doing something wrong. Or better still, my committed partner is doing something wrong and I'm going to have a conversation with that person.
Because I'm not happy 100% of every waking moment.
Absolutely. And so while nobody, by definition, likes adverse emotional events. It is normal. You know, Greg said that in his earlier comments. It's a state of normalcy to have stress. It's a state of normalcy to have what we think of as unwanted feelings. And so one of the things that I talk about with my clients is that if we can change our attitude from unwanted feelings, sadness, despair, anguish, shame, if we can change it from, you know, touching a hot stove, you know, when we touch a hot stove, we want to pull away and say, I'm never going to do that again, which leads to avoidance and strategies for avoiding unwanted feelings that are often unhealthy and can have long-term pathological consequences. On the other hand, if I treat my unwanted emotions as a hot tub, and what do I know about a hot tub? What I know is that when I first put my toe in, that there's a shock and it's unpleasant. But, oh, yes, if I hang in there long enough, if I sit with it quietly, then eventually that shock goes away and then it becomes ultimately pleasant. I'm not suggesting that sadness, anguish, shame, guilt, you know, is going to be pleasant. However, if I can sit with it, it can wash through me and it'll ultimately run its natural course, that the human organism is designed to respond to these emotions, you know, with a certain cycle. It intensifies, it plateaus, and then it fades away, and then I'm on to the next thing. Whether that cycle takes, you know, a second, a minute, a year, you know, it's going to run its course. And I think the challenge for all of us, the human challenge, it's a Homo sapien challenge, is not to believe what my feelings are making me want to believe, that what I feel is very real, but the message that I interpret those feelings to mean is not true. The message is there's something wrong with me. The message is I'm failing. The message is I don't measure up. The message is this person, these people hate me. That's the message that our feelings give us, but it's seldom true. And so if I can uncouple what I feel from what I believe, I think I can adapt a greater resilience to the normal stressors of everyday life.
Again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Let's go to Ruth in Keene. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I'm loving this conversation. I am a naturopathic doctor here in Keene, and I was thrilled to hear one of your contributors today talking about cortisol and how that affects stress and how that's such a part of the stress response. And it's in addition to all of the fantastic ideas that have been floated so far about how to manage stress, I just wanted to mention that in my area in Southwest New Hampshire, I work very closely with MDs and osteopaths, and especially the many, many therapists in the area, to sharing patients and using just natural therapies to work on cortisol and that stress response. And I wondered whether some of your guests are doing anything like that. Obviously, the therapies, the talk therapy, and all of the other things that have been mentioned have a very positive effect on that physiological stress response. But I just wondered what in particular your guests are seeing having a positive effect on the cortisol.
Yeah, Ruth, it's a great question. And there was an interesting report this week, I think, on cortisol levels, how they're related to stress. What about that, Greg Frischone?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that question. At our institute and in many other places around the country, people look for biomarkers, physiological markers of stress and of resiliency. And cortisol has been looked at in terms of salivary cortisol, blood cortisol, hair follicle cortisol levels, these kind of things. The research is difficult because cortisol naturally fluctuates and there's inter-individual variation, et cetera. But there are hard findings that chronic stress will lead to hypercortisolemia. And that really becomes part of the trigger for the epidemic of metabolic syndrome we see, which leads downstream to coronary artery disease, diabetes, on and on, these non-communicable diseases, which the WHO and the CDC have earmarked as the major health challenges of the 21st century. So this is an essential discussion that the society needs to have.
So are there now, ways, Greg, to dial down the cortisol,
foods or exercise? Absolutely. But there is exciting work now in the area of epigenetics. Here, what we look at is something we call the transcriptome, which is the messenger RNA that produces protein. It gives us a window into activation levels of your genes. You know, genetic endowment is important. We're all born with a certain genetic endowment that includes strengths and vulnerabilities. However, our environment, we're learning more and more each day. This is really an explosion of knowledge in all of medicine, that our environment, both external and internal, is going to play a major role in which genes get activated and which genes get deactivated. We now know that there is likely a signature for people who are under the throes of chronic stress, and there is a signature for those who are capable of eliciting relaxation response. And it turns out that if you are capable of integrating a lifestyle that includes meditation and a variety of other resiliency factors, you're able to have a counter-regulatory gene activation state, gene expression state, reflecting perhaps a healthier profile at the cellular level. And this is really important because of what I said at the outset, that stress really is about your energy balance.
Mm.
And if you are constantly in a chronic stress-related cellular state, you can bet dollars to donuts that your energy balance is out of whack.
Wow, right down to the cellular
level. And you're going to be more vulnerable to whatever your genes say you're vulnerable to.
Okay, so
this is really very exciting.
And sorry to interrupt you there, Greg, but after a break, I do want to talk a little bit more about this idea of resilience, how two people can face a similar stressful situation. One seems to work their way through it, the other doesn't. We'll also take a lot more of your calls, so stay on the line. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today, we're talking about stress in Americans' lives, the causes and consequences, and coping mechanisms. You can join us with your thoughts. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Our show today is part of a follow-up with NPR's series this summer on the role of stress in America today. If you missed some of these stories, we've got a link to them on our website, nhpr.org. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Nicole Sawyer, Greg Frischel, Barry Litt, here's an email that came in a while ago from Catherine in Windham, who says, I haven't heard the whole NPR series on stress. As I said, Catherine, nhpr.org, you can find a link there. But from what I've heard, there is a lot of focus on how prevalent stress is, how dangerous it is, and how to cope. Catherine says, I think we need to focus more on preventing stress by alleviating the causes, better wages and working conditions, including more vacation time, time off for emergency personal situations, universal health care, adequate disability insurance, affordable quality child care would go a long way toward alleviating stress. Greg, I think to you first, there was a story in the NPR series about a young waitress, a single mom, she had a 4-year-old daughter. Every waking moment of this young lady's life was focused on where the next dollar was going to come from, how she was going to provide for her daughter.
Right. Yeah, and poverty does make the list in the poll as being an important trigger for chronic debilitating stress. And we're learning more and more about the effects on the brain of poverty, and there's and the effects on what we call cognitive reserve. So this is emblematic of the effects that chronic stress or distress can have on your physiology, in this case on your brain functioning, and then downstream on the health of your other organs. So I applaud that email. I think this has to be entered into the debate in our country, and it in terms of policy. Another important thing is we all know as clinicians that adverse childhood events are extraordinarily important in predicting illness trajectories, as well as the educational failure and criminality and so on. So the country really needs, if you're thinking about looking at preventing stress, the country really needs a Manhattan Project focused on what do we do to diminish the prevalence of adverse childhood events in our society. If we did that, and if we were able to come up with solutions, and the next generation or the generation after it would really stand to reap the benefits, and the society as a whole would be much, much healthier, because those stressors engage the vulnerabilities I just mentioned and lead to a host of medical and psychiatric illnesses.
Nicole, I want to jump in with you on the idea of resilience and then go back to our listeners. We've got a lot of folks who want to join us. The idea that, you know, some folks just, it gets to the physiology that Greg talked about earlier. Some folks just seem to, quote unquote, bounce back from trauma than others. And you deal with people who really have some stressful situations. I mean, state police, combat veterans, first responders. What do you see in terms of this resilience factor?
Well, I mean, I want to point out first that traumatic stress and then sort of the chronic stress that we're talking about are slightly different animals. But in terms of the traumatic stress and the way that people respond, a lot of, as Greg was mentioning, there is this lifetime experience of stress and trauma that feeds into how all of us cope with a traumatic stressor in our adulthood. So our perception about how the world works, our beliefs in right and wrong, our beliefs in humanity, and our prior experiences can become rocked by a traumatic experience in our adulthood. So whether we had a good perception on how the world works and a positive perspective on humanity growing up may influence our ability to cope with witnessing some horrid event or being a part of some sort of horrid event, and vice versa. The vice is true in the sense that if we had a very difficult childhood or we had a very difficult adolescence where we struggled with the way that we were treated by others or lots of stress in our current environment, that when something horrendous happens to us or we witness something horrendous in our adulthood, we have a more difficult time bouncing back from that because we don't have the foundation to fall back on. But in the general sense of resilience, what I see in my office is the folks who are resilient to the stressors in their lives are the folks who come in with self-confidence and acceptance about who they are. You know, a willingness to accept the fact that as an individual, they have strengths and they have weaknesses. And those weaknesses do not make them failures, but instead make them human beings. And finding ways to work with your weaknesses is going to allow you to have the resilience to stand the stress rather than crumbling under the sense that you are a complete failure because you don't have you don't have a strength in every aspect of your life.
All right. Well, let's go back to our listeners. And Jen's calling from Meredith. Hi, Jen. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. So I just wanted to call in. I thought this was a really great program and a great discussion and topic. A lot of the topics seem to resonate with what I was feeling the last few years. I went to college to be a teacher and got straight A's, did all the right things. But, you know, then I was teaching and realized that the student loan debt and the pay that I was getting weren't really working out. And you just don't have enough time to get everything done. But on top of that, I grabbed a second job. So I really put my personal health on the sideline and, you know, I got mono and just wasn't keeping up with my emotional well-being. So I figured I just needed to push the pause button at some point and step back, and I feel a lot better. You know, I'm working at a running store now, and I get to run every day and kind of take care of my mental health.
So push the pause button. I like the way you said that, Jen. Did you have a hard time doing that? Did you think, this is America, it's competitive, I got to be out there, I got to be the best?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely, you feel like a pressure cooker. You feel like you're alone in that situation, that idea of the community. I really resonate with that. And I think a lot of people nowadays do. You feel kind of alone in it.
Yeah. So how are you feeling now?
I feel a lot better now because I moved back in with family and I get to see people at the store all the time and we do running groups and that social interaction and taking care of my health, it just feels a lot better.
Okay. Jen, thanks a lot for calling and sharing in your story. Here's another email that just came in. This is from Craig, who says, geez, it sounds like these people have no kids or certainly not any little kids. You want to talk stress? Try two parents, working with two in daycare. Craig says, good luck meditating. Craig, I got two kids. I understand. But Barry Litt, what do you think? This gets to what somebody talked about earlier. I got no time to do this. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and I have two kids as well, and I'm totally with Greg on this. I think that there are real-life external stressors that really we don't have much ability to change. And if you have two careers and two kids and those children need to be parented and, you know, you need to feed everybody, that's a pressure cooker environment. And so
I have heard, though, Barry, yeah, and we've done a lot of shows on this, on picking up on the word you said, parented, that expectations, we keep getting back to that,
sure,
expectations about what it means to parent are different than what they used to be. And maybe some parents today are over-parenting. And we've heard this from, you know, leading child development experts that maybe you don't need to do everything for your kids and that would allow you a little bit of time for yourself.
Yeah, I certainly see, especially in upper middle class families, college educated families, an expectation that their children are going to be young Einsteins and the next Nobel laureates, and I think that creates its own layer of stress. But even when that's not the case, I mean, just the mere fact of having to drop off and pick up and manage homework and meals on top of working, you know, a full-time job or then some. I mean, more folks are working, you know, 50, 60 hours, and perhaps the caller is too. So, you know, I'm very, you know, empathic to that dilemma, and I wouldn't suggest that, you know, some easy remedy or, you know, go out and jog and everything will be better. No, I mean, that reality is exactly that, and that that's why the best, I think, hope for relief comes from changing the internal environment, whether that's reducing my expectations or realizing, you know, what I need to let go of, or spending more time on things that are, you know, revivifying to my soul and energy levels. Am I getting enough sleep? I mean, even that's compromised in a lot of families today. So, no, I wouldn't propose that there's some simple trick or easy remedy that I'm promoting. No, I think it's a real life dilemma, and that the best we can do is see what trying to incremental changes to how I treat myself, care for myself.
That 10 minutes that Nicole talked about.
That's right. And also just my expectation that, you know, it's going to feel crummy. And feeling crummy doesn't mean that I'm doing a bad job or that something's broken and needs to be fixed. That feeling crummy is part of the deal.
Well, and Craig, I guess I would say mine are a little older than yours. So if you can hang on, it does get a little bit easier as they get older and more independent.
Yeah, so you know, 30 or 40 years, you know.
Yeah. Craig, we really appreciate the email. Thank you so much. Although, you know, talking about expectations, Nicole, you know, there are a lot of expectations around parents, you know, but don't let them watch too much TV and feed them homemade meals and they need to eat their fruits and vegetables. And, you know, you kind of do feel like you don't have a moment to do anything for yourself. That's not allowed.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there was a time where being good enough was good enough. And I think right now, you know, good enough is failing in a lot of people's perspectives on parenting.
Isn't there a book, The Good Enough Parent, or something like that? I feel like I've heard that. Yeah,
you know, and there's this sense again that we've talked about expectations about you know, everything you do for your child, every birthday party, every play date has to be Pinterest worthy. And the reality is that sometimes the kid's playing in the backyard with a couple of sticks and a few rocks and you get a half hour to sit and have some coffee is perfectly acceptable. And you don't have to be out there running around with them and you don't have to be making memories every moment of the day. And so good enough needs to be good enough sometimes when we're finding ourselves feeling overwhelmed.
Well, good luck to you, Craig. And let's go next to Paul in Manchester. Hi, Paul. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Go ahead,
hello?
Paul. Yeah, we're here.
Yes. Are life stressors and how you live with them, how you deal with them, I find that relatively little bothers me, although I do understand the serious nature of events. But just in the recent past, divorce, job loss, loss of retirement, save the house, still going into foreclosure, then bankruptcy, and then bypass surgery without any health insurance. But I came through all of that. I couldn't feel better. I have a positive outlook. None of that got me down. And then last summer, I was assisting a friend, and the tractor he was driving backed over me, and the excitement, he drove back over me and clutched both my legs. And
Paul!
I actually had a real good time with it. I had to call 911 because he was so shook up. I thought I'd have to call an ambulance for him. And I got through that. I want to say I had last summer off. It was great, other than the minor inconvenience.
A minor inconvenience of getting your legs crushed.
I've never felt better in my life, and I'm actually having a good time, even after going through all that. And I'm wondering, where does that come from? And I did hear you discuss that a little bit.
And can we bottle and sell it, Paul? I mean, good for you. Briefly, Greg, because we're running into the end of the hour. What makes Paul so resilient to stress where the rest of us would crumble and fall apart?
Well, you know, God bless him. Paul is someone that William James would love to meet. Basically, William James, a lot of what we've been talking about today, William James thought about at the turn of the 19th century. You know, basically, there are people who are gifted in this regard. They're the healthy-minded among us, and that probably has a neurobiological foundation. They're optimistic. Their life has purpose. They see life in an optimistic way rather than a pessimistic way. Barry was mentioning about internal drivers of stress. These people minimize internal drivers of stress, and they have a positive outlook on life. They're natural positivists, and they reap the benefits of that in terms of physiology and downstream effects on their lives.
Well, it's great to hear from you.
So he's a very resilient person, and we can learn from him.
Well, one more question for all of you. Maybe you, Barry. I think this caught my attention as part of this NPR series, which has been great. And by the way, if people want to hear more of the stories, we've got a link on our website. One of the reports said, binging on bad news can fuel daily stress. And not that we here at NHPR obviously want to discourage people from listening to the news. But I was struck, Barry, by that word, binging on bad news. And it does seem that compared to 15 years ago, there's news everywhere. You know, the airport is no longer a neutral zone. There's a million TVs. I've been in teeny tiny doctor's offices, you know, with two chairs, and there's still a TV. What about that? You know, it's a beautiful day. You have a perfectly lovely life. And then you're waiting at the doctor's office, and it's, you know, disasters and wars and accidents and school shootings.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Does that create stress, even though your own life may be going very well?
I think, you know, it reminds me of rubberneck syndrome. You know, you're driving on the highway, and you can't look at the accident, but you can't resist looking at the accident. That there's something kind of upside down about our being drawn like moths to the flame to bad news. But the mere fact that, you know, as Homo sapiens, we naturally relate to and empathize with tragedy, disaster, and so forth. And you know, I don't know what good it would do in my own life to hear about, you know, a robbery or a liquor store being stuck up. I choose not to listen to that kind of stuff. But I don't want to spend logging hours empathizing with or sympathizing, really, with disaster, tragedy, and so forth, and say essentially filling myself with stress hormones in my spare time. I've got enough fish to fry without, you know, adding to that. So it's a bizarre feature of modern life that we are get 24-hour, you know, news and we're drawn to it. But I don't see that really giving us fulfillment.
Okay, all of you, a million more things we could have talked about. We could have gone on a lot longer. Thank you all very much for being here. Greg Frischone, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Greg Frischone, Associate Chief of Psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital and the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine. Barry Litt, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Barry Litt, marriage and family therapist at Human Dynamics Associates in Concord. And Nicole Sawyer, thank you also for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Nicole Sawyer, clinical psychologist in Exeter, consulting psychologist for the New Hampshire State Police. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Faith Meixel is our producer. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. I'm Laura Kanoy.